place is different. Special. The others don't want to talk about it because it scares them. But we all know it. We all feel it. Do you really think all this is an accident? That we, a group of strangers, survived? Many of us with just superficial injuries? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, John?
The island.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back!
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I brought a comic book on Flight 815. It was Superior Spider-Man number one.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and I brought a comic book on Flight 815, a whole series of them. It is Why the Last Man.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I brought a graphic novel, what I believe to be a very useful comic book-like thing. I'm bringing Watchmen for two reasons. One, it's a good book. Two, it's a very heavy book, so it might have been useful after the crash.
I have an individual issue. Neil has, like, something that could maybe get through the crash. Joanna has 60 individual issues that are probably, you know, bagged and boarded. And
oh, I definitely bag and board my issues. You know me.
Yeah.
My choice.
If you have a complete Why the Last Man.
There's a whole valley of Why the Last Man comics spread out somewhere on the island.
My choice is a good one, obviously, because Brian K. Vaughan, who wrote Why the Last Man, also wrote for Lost. And it's a story about post-apocalyptic, like, sort of survival, group of survival people, survivors.
That's true. I think Neil is the only one who's existed in 2004.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. So, damn it.
I didn't know I was going to win a
good
prize.
Good job, all of us.
So maybe
that.
When I time traveled. No, it started 2002. Why the Last Man? By the way.
But you said you had all 60 issues. You
did I say all of them? I said I had a lot. Anyway.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
Maybe I only have 2002.
I just wanted to show off that I knew all the issue numbers of Why the Last Man.
What is this podcast about?
This podcast is about Lost. We're rewatching Lost from the first season. We're doing one episode a week. We are up to special episode 14 of season one. We divide this podcast into two parts, The Calm and The Storm. The Calm has no discussion beyond episode 14, season one special. It's a Walt and Michael episode. And then The Storm will have spoilers about the rest of the series and thoughts that came up this episode that made us think about the rest of Lost. If you like the show, but maybe Lost isn't your thing and you've been hanging on by tenterhooks over here, you should know about patreon.com/stormofspoilers. That was the name of our Game of Thrones podcast. There, you could sign up for a whole bunch of extra content. This past week, we did a Quentin Tarantino episode that not only had a calm section without spoilers for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where we ranked all the movies, but then a discussion about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where we all sort of gave our readings of the movie and reacted to the general discourse of film Twitter and people who like Quentin Tarantino movies. If you are amongst the people who like Quentin Tarantino movies and this podcast, that's definitely for you. Make sure you subscribe at patreon.com/stormofspoilers for content like that every week.
Dave,
usually multiple times a week. Yes.
I have a fun fact about that.
Yeah, fun fact. Let's do it.
In a twist that would make Quentin Tarantino very happy, it is by far our longest bonus episode ever at 1 hour and 1 minute. It is a Tarantino-sized bonus episode.
Excellent. Yes. So as the Lost Rewatch podcast expands in length, so too does the bonus content. Patreon.com/Storm of Spoilers. Joanna, this is the time that we hear from our listeners. For two main ways. But the first of those main ways is through iTunes reviews.
We love iTunes reviews. Thank you guys so much for leaving them. I will read at least one for you right now. This is from DFGT. You'll be the reason I'll be rewatching season 6 since 2008. 5 stars. Longtime listener, first time writing in. I've been a longtime fan of your Game of Thrones podcast, and like many people, I was a bit disappointed with how it ended. So similar to how I felt after Lost ended. But when I heard that you were switching over to Lost, I got so nostalgic of my second most favorite show of all time, that is behind the X-Files and ahead of Game of Thrones. I rewatched Lost one other time back in preparation for the final season 6, but in 10 years, I've not been able to rewatch season 6. Finally jumping in, and I can't wait to relive the best time of my life, my Lost origin story. 2004 to 2008 were good times. I was in my early 30s working in a cool part of Brooklyn, and I just bought my own condo in Brooklyn, too. Damn, that's the most 2004 thing about this iTunes review. Before that, I was living at home, so everything was a new experience for me. Everybody was talking about this new show, Lost, that just ended its first season. I was determined to find out what all the fuss was about. So I Netflixed, remember doing that, all of season 1, he means discs. And got hooked after that. My friends, who were also my coworkers, lived a few blocks from each other, and we would often gather for Lost nights. We'd buy bottles of wine, cook dinner, and dig into watching the newest episode. Often we would gather at my place, as I had the biggest space and the biggest TV, after I bought a 46-inch flat screen Samsung.
That is now
which I paid,
2004 thing.
Which I paid $1,700 for. All those days are so much fun. Thanks for helping me relive those memorable times. Best Amy. I'm so sorry I misgendered Amy earlier in the review. That was from a lady, Amy, who spells her name. I don't know. So that was a review, and it was a great one. Thank you so much. And we've gotten so many good emails about people's origin stories. If you want to email us your origin story for Lost, you can email us at host@stormpodcast.com. You can also find like more info about the podcast, including old episodes and other things, at stormpodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter at stormpodcast. So we got like a whole bunch of different ways to reach us. I'll just read this. Okay. So this email comes from Alan, and Alan writes, I love your podcast. I've listened since season 6, and thanks for the awesomeness of the 2.5 years of the off-season tour coverage before season 7 and 8. I'm still with you guys. I love the transition to Lost. After Survivor, this is my favorite show when it came out. I remember seeing the trailer with the "Where are we?" line and knew that I had to watch this new show. I'm thankful for your recaps because I don't know if I would ever spend the time to rewatch the episodes otherwise. I've rented season 1 from my library because I don't have Hulu. I love that. My question, when I finally am getting to, is this: where can I find the complete series on Blu-ray that is region coded for the US? I've searched myself, but all the Amazon and eBay listings say region B or have comments that all the seasons are region free except for season 3 or 4, which won't play in the US. So do we off the top of our head know the answer for Alan, from Indianapolis, or maybe we can leave it up to another one of our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I know the set that he wants because Katie Rich has it. Yeah. Oh. And let me play with it.
The temple set,
which is after it was, the entire series was over. That was the first, release on disc. Is it available anymore? Let's do some Googling.
It's, it really is, as far as I know, only available on like secondhand markets. So like buying it used, or from eBay or something like that. It's a tough one to find. And, I think it is also true that the normal, like, Lost, Blu-ray is not available, probably because they're going to release another collector's set, if I would guess, maybe for the
what's next
year is the 10th anniversary of the finale.
Right.
So that could be a good time, you know, just like they were just brought back From the Earth to the Moon, which was from the 90s, but they did it for the Apollo 11 anniversary.
I can't see a full region code one U.S. complete series that's not used. I think our emailer is correct that he's gonna have to go to the used market.
Sure, used market.
Find that out.
Yeah. Otherwise, Hulu appears to be the best and only way to watch Lost right now.
This episode not actually brought to you by Hulu.
Right.
But it could be. They want to sponsor it. Anyway, yeah. So that, thank you, Alan. So those are our, news and reviews. You know, Neil, when I was in school, the cool thing was like slap bracelets or Pokemon cards. Like if you were cool if you had them, and if you weren't, you weren't cool. Now it's Bombas socks that bring out all the envy on the schoolyard. I have a really important question for you, though.
Yes.
You know, what do you think our friend, our pal Walt on Lost would wear for back to school if he ever goes back to school?
If Walt ever makes it off the island, I would hope that he would embrace his superpowerness and get some Bombas socks, obviously. Specifically the kind of Bombas socks that I got, which are the Muhammad Ali Bombas socks, which make me feel like I can float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. They're super comfortable, extremely colorful. I think Walt would be like a more actualized person post-island, if you ever got off the island.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he would be spreading color into the universe. So
I love it.
That's why I was thinking about Bombas socks, because they're very colorful. They have all kinds of fun styles. It's great.
All right. So we're hoping for Walt to get off the island,
mm-hmm,
and ever go back to school and continue to make birds fly into windows.
Right.
And wear some Bombas socks.
Yes.
That
make him feel heroic.
If you want to be cool like Neil and Walt.
And Muhammad Ali.
And Muhammad Ali. You can visit bombas.com/storm and get 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/storm for 20% off your first purchase. Bombas.com/storm.
Hey, what are you guys talking about? We need to talk about Lost. Neil, it's time for the calm. What can you tell us about this episode of Lost, Season 1, Episode 14, Special?
Well, Dave, as you mentioned earlier, it is a Michael and Walt episode. It's directed by Greg. I struggle with. This is Yatenis?
Let's say Yatenis?
Yatenis? Anyway, he directed it. It was written by David Fury. This episode aired on January 19th, 2005. And it takes place on days 26 and 27 on the island. Those are some fun facts. In flashback, we learn that Walt is named after Michael's father, which I always find to be sweet. We learn about how Walt ended up separated from his father, and eventually how he ended up in Australia. We also meet Brian, who sucks. we learn that Michael once got hit by a car really horribly. And we learn that Walt's mom, Susan, dies of a blood disorder that comes on very quickly. Then later, Brian gives Walt back to Michael after adopting him, because Brian sucks. We also learn that there might be some dark Walt magic. On the island, Walt learns how to use his mind's eye to throw big-ass knives. He gets bossed around a little bit by his dad. He talks some shit to his dad. He gets his comic book burned up. He also yells Vincent a bunch. Michael decides that he's going to build a raft and get off the island because he doesn't want his son hanging out with Mr. Locke. He used to be an artist and work in construction, by the way, so he's uniquely qualified to build the raft. He also yells Walt a bunch. This is important. This is a thing. Charlie searches for Claire's luggage, learns that Sawyer has Claire's diary, and then learns that Sawyer hits like a ponce. And then later, Charlie totally reads Claire's diary, which we'll have to talk about. Shannon confronts Boone about them not bringing back any food, but it turns out Boone is super over her now. Locke and Michael ultimately have to save Walt from a polar bear. Never forget about the polar bears, which then gives Michael and Walt time to bond over the letters that Walt's mom kept from him for years during his childhood. Letters from his father. It's very mean. It all ends with Claire wandering back from the jungle. All right, guys. I have a fun fact. This is the first episode of Lost that follows the traditional flashback formula, but it centers on multiple characters. So this is the first multiple character flashback that is centered on two characters. That makes sense, right? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because we got the two island characters both in the flashback.
Yeah, it's great. It's a fun one. Okay. I have a question to open the discussion. So Claire's back. This is a big needle drop at the end there. Let's say that you're one of the survivors on the islands. You're one of the other 40, whatever. And they assign you to fill in Claire with what's been going on since she's been gone. So what do you think is, I guess, the hottest gossip to give to Claire now that she's returned from the jungle? Let's start with Joanna.
Oh my God. Do you know we have a garden now? Well, you know, I can do better than that. Oh my God. Did you see that rugby shirt girl change her shirt?
Dave, do you, what would you tell Claire?
Mine would be like, you certainly didn't miss any boar. We haven't had any since you left. Yes, you came back the day after we played golf for the last of the deodorants, so shit out of luck there. Sorry, pregnant girl.
I feel like mine would be, since I'm feeling very Jan Roycey at this moment, mine would be, have you heard about Saeed and Shannon?
I saw him pry some shoes off a dead girl to get
some shoes.
Remember when Saeed gave Shannon shoes? I just need you to know that that happened. Which episode do they play golf in? Does she even know about the golf course?
I think she's around for the golf. Or
because
the golf
that was
happening
one of our...
while she's being taken?
No, that was one of our fun facts, is they wrote the golf to happen she was taken,
like,
but they moved it before because they were like, this is a step too far.
Totally
too
dark. A little off.
Which, like, already Charlie has to, like, surf a very thin line between, like, trauma and comedy with the whole diary thing, which means they held off bringing Claire back for as long as possible because it has sort of felt weird, her absence. We've seen things like, you know, Jack just wandered around last episode. Locke started forming his own, like, cult or team, that he's, secret hatch going on.
Boone and Walt.
I mean, the A team right there.
Yeah.
But maybe actually.
Walt, I guess,
is,
Vincent too.
I don't know if you heard, but Walt's different. So.
He's a little different. He might even be special, but no one's willing to admit it.
What? Something I want to kick off before we get too far in, because I know people will be mad if we don't say it early, is that the actress who plays Susan, Walt's mom, Tamara Taylor, a lot of people know her from the TV series Bones. This is the first time, I believe, we get an actor in a flashback where you're like, wow, you were much more famous later. But it won't be the last time. So... right?
That's true. Yeah. I mean, most of the flashback people have been what I believe to be local Hawaiians doing Australian accents. Which, that's not going to make you famous later.
Tamara Taylor, you know. I think I had not seen Bones the last time I watched this episode, and then I watched it. I was like, hey, it's that lady from Bones. All right.
Anyway. And she's really good in this episode. There's something to the way you're supposed to feel about Walt's mom. Like it's kind of, I mean, she straight up takes Walt from Michael, and like the whole way it's like, well, she's kind of got a point the whole time. So I've always found it to be like it's a very nuanced way that I feel about her throughout the episode, because she like dies at the end. So it's super sad.
Yeah, she's a ghost wife.
She's a ghost ex-wife.
Susan would have done well. They were never married, but Susan would. Well, I was the one who said wife in the first place. Susan would have done very well on the island. I feel like she just like smiled at someone and just talked them into something. She's like, "Boone, don't you think I should put this ayahuasca goop on your scalp? It's good for you. It'll be better in the end. Really, you'll get over your weird fascination with your sister. It's fine."
It would be interesting to have a lawyer on the island.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there isn't one, right? Nobody's a lawyer, as far as we know.
I think rugby shirt girl is a lawyer.
Rugby shirt girl. She's a paralegal, at the very least.
Yeah, by evidence of clothing alone. I really like how much stuff is in this episode, because I think it keeps us from, like, lingering on anything too long for it to feel weird. The flashback stuff, not only does it have, I think, sympathetic people on both sides, even though we're supposed to be firmly, you know, rooted in Michael, but because it needs to accelerate to where, you know, Walt's mom dies, I think it either leaves a lot of room that could be complicated later, or immediately, you know, doesn't get bogged down in some of the more stereotypical things other people's backstories have gotten into, because by the time something's happened to Michael, like the next scene, something else horrible is happening to Michael. We don't have a lot of downtime. We don't have Claire's two visits to a psychic in between things to pad out flashback. So I like not only how much stuff is happening in Michael's flashback to make the dynamic between he and Walt interesting as we're flashing forward to the island, because I think the show has really figured out how to work that structure to it, but also how much stuff is happening on the island, because we know the side plot of the hatch and how Boone was switched. There's this new, you know, menace to Walt hanging out with him and learning how to throw knives, and Locke's sternness that is partially undone in this episode, or at least he sort of reopens a conversation with Michael by the end through polar bear heroics. But still, we're getting to the point of Lost that I said I liked so much in All the Best Cowboys Have Daddy Issues, which is like, there are teams and there are mysteries in the jungle and there are things to do and people have to run everywhere. I think that's where the show is really working at a clip. And not that I didn't enjoy a golf course, but like even the side mention of deodorant golfing in this episode was just like, all right, guys, we have way more important things happening, both at an interpersonal level and on an island level, to really be worrying about superficial things anymore.
Well, the Locke, when Locke is telling Michael, he's basically giving Michael parenting advice about how Walt should be treated. I was sitting there thinking, oh my God, this is the most Survivor thing about this episode, which is like, this is Locke like planting his flag and being like, and he kind of makes some good points, I think, about like Walt having gone through so much trauma, just like let the kid learn some knife stuff.
They've been on the island for like 20 some days now. So everybody's like done being fake nice to each other. Like everyone, it's time to get real world up on the island.
True story. So here's the deal. That was the most 90s thing about this podcast is what I just did. Last week was the worst thing Locke had done on the island yet, right? Which is goop poor Boone, right?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, Boone seems fine with it now.
Boone is fully zombie on board now. He's like ride or die for Locke.
I mean, in my mind, the context makes it even darker. So,
but that being said, this is like the reason why Locke is so hard to pin down is this is like a swing, and you know, like yeah, maybe he's playing the long con with Michael, maybe, but like also it just seems like to genuinely be like trying to respect Michael's wishes, letting Michael be a bit of a hero when they go, like, you know, try to find Walt and stuff like that. Like, he's, you know, the ways in which he's deferential to Michael. We can discuss it more in the storm as we usually do, but like, this feels like
a pretty good guy by the end of this.
Yeah, this is a hero episode.
At the beginning, in this speech that I mentioned, he's, you know, it feels like it's like, well, who the hell is this guy, really, to be giving him parenting advice? By the end, it's like he still shows Michael so much respect that, you know, we come back around on him.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there's a thawing between those characters, but I don't think that undoes... I guess this comes a little bit more from like a personal opinion thing, but I'm really, having worked in parenting media for so long, I've actually become less judgy of like, if I see a parent like yelling at their child in the caves to like not fucking go anywhere. This episode, you know, makes it feel weird, but then we learn the context of, you know, Michael and Walt's relationship up to that point. And you're like, oh, maybe you should never tell parents forcefully that they're doing something wrong.
I disagree. I think this this episode walks the line because Jack, you know, Hurley's like, he really hates it being a dad. And Jack's like, no, it's just hard. You know what I mean? Like, Jack's giving that response that, like, those of us who have lived a little and, like, I don't know, like, yeah, there's the time in your life where you get in an airplane and a kid is being, like, loud and annoying and crying or whatever, and you're like, oh, my peace and quiet, blah. And then, hopefully, there's a time in your life where you either, like, know a parent or have a child or whatever, where you're like, everyone's just trying to do their best. And you get, like, much more zen about kids on planes. At least that's what happened to me, like, when I had nephews and stuff like that. I, like, imagined my sister in that position, and then I was like, okay, I'm not mad at those parents. I'm not mad at that kid. Everyone's just doing their best on this plane. So unless it's, like, deeply egregious, it's hard for me to get, yeah, judgy about the way that people parent, because you just don't, you don't know the story at all. So, like,
we don't know that they stole Brian's dog.
And I think, yeah. I think that Jack represents that, where he's just like, no, parenting's hard, man. Like, it's a rare case, I think, where Hurley's a little wrong, or very wrong, actually. So, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, specifically, he's like, yeah, he hates being a dad. Yeah. And then the whole episode is, like, proving that very, very, very wrong.
Yeah, so.
But yeah, I like this episode because not only is there that, you know, father-son conflict, which is good, and then the island seems to, you know, sort of foster that in everybody, or maybe everybody has, like, weird parent issues on this island. But I also like that we have this new mystery. Like, Claire comes back this episode, and it's not until that moment that you realize they're sort of pairing our mental power episodes together. The last time on Lost, we talked about maybe somebody being able to see the future. Claire see the future is in her episode. And here, not only do we have...
right, her dream.
Yeah, her dream from the diary, but we have Walt making a bird fly into glass, which is universal pop culture for I have psychic powers. He's, something's wrong with this child.
He's different. Or, I don't know about wrong, he's just different. He's, would you say...
Yes, that's true.
Special?
Maybe.
Do you... Possibly.
He might be special. The polar bear, I mean, the polar bear stuff too. You know what I mean? Like, manifest a polar bear?
Oh my God.
You made a bear! Undo it! That's a Buffy reference. All right, go ahead.
Here is a question that I have. Is this the first time that we're getting non-island specific magic? Or like, yeah, like some sort of like magical force thing that happened in a flashback, I guess.
I think so. I mean, I think that
Walt the first character that we are aware of.
Well, do you consider the psychic sort
of non-island towers?
At this point, do you think the psychic actually saw the plane crash?
Oh,
because
yeah,
so he was off the island.
That guy, maybe.
We don't know, but
I think this is the first time we've visually seen something.
This is the first time we get any kind of non-island magic, is just all I wanted to point out.
It's probably not a scam. There's probably not somebody throwing dead birds at their window.
Something that we've talked about is, basically just keep books with pictures away from Walt is the, you know, and then everything will be fine. But, something that we've talked about on the show already is the way in which, the Lost creators had to sort of Trojan horse their genre show into this like opportunity they were given on network TV. And so I think you'll see like it's a slow boil towards the weird, right? And this is the first like bubble. I think Walt, the polar bear, the bird is the first bubble in the.
Well,
in
John.
John, sure. No, not like it's the
remember
weirdest.
When John could walk.
Yeah,
now.
But like some people, I mean, honestly, some of our first time watchers are like, I thought maybe the fall was like snapped his spine back into place or something.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
No.
Like, I don't know. People have thoughts and feelings, but this is, you know, this is unmistakable. We still don't know what's in the jungle in terms of like, you know, the old clickety clack noise. but like, watching that bird fly into, I just don't think we can underestimate how much of like a game changer that is. And the polar bear, I mean, like the polar, that's the first thing I remember hearing about Lost, which is not the polar bear that they shoot earlier in the season, but this polar bear.
Right.
This, like, there was a polar bear in a comic book and now there's a polar,
the polar bear,
bear
from
the
Walt's
island.
Mind.
Yeah, exactly. The mind.
I do remember. I do remember during the first watch, like when it was going on, like that was wild. the bird hitting the thing, like having some sort of like almost like a superpower, basically. Like to me at the time, it was like, oh, they're introducing a character who has like a power, which is a really bold thing to do. What, 14 episodes into your show? So yeah, it's really interesting.
I was dumb the first time I watched this, and was like, oh, the monster was always just a polar bear. I didn't necessarily put like the manifesting.
This is where
together.
We confess to what we thought.
Yeah, well, basically, because here's in terms of how rules work, we saw Walt run a bird into glass. We didn't see him manifest anything, and I think there's still some debate on whether or not he did. It seems like he's magic enough to, but manifesting something is completely different from like making a bird go crazy, which is something we should probably
That's
talk
true,
about
but
in the storm.
This is the second episode in a row where someone has manifested a monster. In some way, it was Goop.
That's true.
It was Goop last week, and this week maybe it was, because I don't know. We never see, nobody gets like hit by the polar bear, right? Like the polar bear could have been like a three-way hallucination situation too.
Whoa! Oh.
Like Walt could have been like inceptioning Michael and Locke,
like Professor Xing is.
Yeah, he's like
trauma.
There's a polar bear here, and everybody just believes it. But there's not.
The polar bear is me being angry at my father.
Well, and the polar bear was from the book, you know? And the bird was also from the book that he was reading at the time. So Walt's superpower is he can turn literature into real animals that attack him.
Interesting. So you think he did
really
manifest
dumb the superpower, sorry.
See, wait, so you think he did manifest the bird, he didn't just cause the bird to crash into stuff.
I'm not sure you manifested. I'm not sure you manifested the polar bear. But I'm also not sure the show knows at this point whether or not he manifested
right, exactly.
The polar
I don't
bear.
Know. I don't know if there is an answer to these questions. I think it's kind of fun as like a wild theory. I feel like this is the kind of theory I would have if we were back watching it again, which is like because he burned the polar bear comic. The polar bear is what Walt. The polar bear was like the marshmallow man for Walt.
Sure.
When he gets angry, he summons whatever animal he's recently looked at.
Interesting. It's like the worst Power Ranger.
Right. Like it's like a really shitty superpower.
Worst Power Ranger.
Interesting.
I want to talk about something that Harold Perrineau, who plays Michael. Who people know from Romeo plus Juliet and or
Mercutio.
The HBO series Oz. I also think he's in this film Women on Top. Anyway, I wouldn't recommend Googling this interview that I'm about to read from because it has some spoilers in it. But he talks a bit about Michael, this idea of Michael as like a black father and what responsibility Lost has and its depiction of like black fatherhood. You know, like Michael's the only survivor who's a father, right? On the island right now.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, he makes that point that he's like the only one. That's why he wants to
get off.
The
yeah,
so
yeah.
Bad this episode.
But like the stereotypical depiction of black fathers in both like our society and in our culture and media, stuff like that is like, black men abandoning their children. Right. And, I think it's interesting that this episode is like, here's Michael who wants nothing more in the world than to be with his son and is like forcibly separated from him. So like Walt grows up with daddy issues. But in this case, it's like the opposite of what we see sometimes stereotypically depicted in that it's not a black man who has abandoned his son. It's a black man who has had his son taken from him.
Right.
So I think.
And it's also, it's another way that Lost is, you know, they're using flashbacks to sort of turn around what we may have assumed about characters because we never really had a ton of context for the tension in between Michael and Walt. You know, we knew that how much of this did we know? We knew that
Walt had another dad.
That Walt had another dad that Walt grew up with without Michael. We didn't really know anything beyond that. So I think, especially in 2004, there's a lot of room for the audience to have assumed a lot about Michael that this episode really turns on its head, which I thought, you know, maybe the most 2004 thing about this episode is how like progressive it was for the time, you know, as far as the representation that it was bringing to primetime TV.
I think when the show can successfully flip expectations like that, it makes a really good episode. It's the ones where it's like, oh, I wonder what the rock star drug addict story is. Or I wonder what the rich, you know, son of a wedding magnate's life is really like. Where it's just like, oh, it's exactly what I assumed it would be, give or take a couple of incest throws. that makes for a disappointing episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, we should mention or go back and nail that there's now a second faction. There used to be Caves and Beach. It seems like, you know, the beach people have been waiting around with not a ton to do, but now there's some raft building going on that Michael has begun with Walt, but is definitely still going on at the end of the episode.
There's a lot of people thinking about joining the raft crew.
Yeah, there's about to be a team raft, and we don't know where it stands in comparison to Team Hatch. But more teams means we're heating up the inter-losty conflict.
Well, and it's also the this momentum in a direction, right? You know, because like there are these little like missions that people have had. There's a reason to tromp into the jungle. I think that's mentioned in this episode. Oh, like what are we gonna tromp into the jungle and get ourselves killed over this time or something like that? But like this idea that. Like, Michael is so fixated on getting Walt off the island that there is, like, now a mission to get off the island. And that's a different kind of forward momentum, which I think the show really needs at this point. Because, yeah, like, mm-hmm. the hatch is a question and a mystery. But, you know, this, like, we need to get our asses off this island is something, a sense of urgency that the show has been missing a little bit.
At a certain point, someone has to say what the audience is thinking, which is, why is no one trying to get off the island?
Why is no one trying to get their ass off this island?
It's been almost a month. So the only thing that I think rings weird to me in this episode from a character standpoint from everybody is, why does Sawyer take Clara's diary? Does anybody have an answer that makes me feel better?
Sawyer just collects shit to start shit.
Yeah.
That there's no other better answer than that.
No.
He's just the Templeton.
I actually, honestly, it's funny because I believe Sawyer when he says he didn't read it. And I don't think he would have read it because I don't think he cares what's in it. I think he cares more about using it to rile up Charlie.
Yeah.
Is he just like, no one's going to talk to me unless I steal their stuff?
Pretty much.
So I might as well steal all the stuff.
Unless he's gambling on golf with shampoo.
He wins all the deodorant sticks back.
Yeah,
he's probably fronting those tournaments.
Now that the tournaments are over and the deodorant is gone, he's got to move on to harder drugs.
I cannot believe that it is only 1 month and they had a line in there about all the deodorant being gone. Like, the last of the deodorant sticks. Because, guys, there's so much show left and there's so much sweating left to do. When they said that, I like dropped my pen. I was like, I'm sorry, what? We're running out of deodorant and it is 1 month in. So someone better discover crystal deodorant, a cache of crystal deodorant hidden.
Oh, it's just
somewhere.
A different kind of goop that John can make.
Yeah.
This goop
doesn't smell so bad.
Don't mix it up with that other goop. You don't want to smear that in your armpit.
Don't.
Unless you're in need of a breakthrough, and then I can help you. So
then you just need an open wound, and we're good to go.
Yike.
And to stay with the diary and to live up to Neil's promise, Charlie reads the diary. Yes, he finds something that could be important if we believe that Claire can see, I don't know if it's into the future or it's sideways, but has had some sort of dream of the Black Rock, which he feels like is a discovery enough to justify telling everybody that he read the diary. And then everyone's like, he's like, yeah, I'm horrible. And then he's like, but I found this. And everyone's like, yeah, okay. And they leave the diary reading sort of open-ended, which I guess is, you know, what you expect from open the case in front of me, Jack, but did seem weird with like a council of otherwise responsible cave dwellers.
Right. To them, it's just information. I think it's going to be a huge problem for Charlie when Claire finds out that he read her diary.
Right.
You know, because she's going to be mad. But everybody else is, they're in survivor mode. They're like, it's just information. Also,
yeah, that's what I was,
they kind of pointed out.
Well, I was like thinking about it in the moment. I'm like, if I'm Charlie here, when does it become okay in my own personal morals to read the diary? And the answer is when I actually think she's dead. So if that happens, cool. But then him struggling over whether or not
we need to find a body first, basically.
Or we need to make it a scene of him being so depressed that he like reads the diary. It's played off as like a comedy bit here and then shrugged off as him, you know, being horrible. But, and I feel like that's sort of a not picking a lane for how you want this diary thing to go off, at least in this episode. You're right, Neil. If Claire comes back and is, you know, I don't know, able to talk.
Well,
and
now that Claire
that
is back.
Her. Right, right. I meant if Claire is fully back, mentally and whatnot, and has time to worry about pettiness like somebody reading your diary, then yeah, it's a real dick move. All right.
Yeah,
do we have anything?
I vote dick move as well.
Do you have anything very like polar bear? Do we need to do you polygon breakdown about how 2004 isn't good for CG polar bears?
It's really mushy.
It's not great. Yeah, yeah. Also, just like, obviously not a lot of proper photo reference taken, or maybe just hair wasn't at the point where television could do white polar bear hair in a jungle setting. But, you know, a lot of dummy polar bear, and then a lot of polar bear from behind scratching up against a wall of vines. But
I mean, the best stuff they do in that sequence are like the close-ups in the tree, making the tree look huge, and the way they shoot like characters responding to the polar bear. The wide shots of the polar bear are hilarious.
Yes. And this is like one of the first times in the show, because I think the pilot was so well executed and funded, you could really feel them shooting around something. And it's not to like build mystery or whatnot, because when they do that, it feels like of a piece. But here it's like, there's the polar bear. Let's cut away and watch Michael climb across a branch for an entire shot. And I'm like, no, if you have the capability of doing polar bear shots, you keep that on the polar bear. But again, 2004 visual effects are what they are. I'm surprised they were able to pull it off even to the degree that they did. Because the polar bear in the jungle is weird. We have no basis in our mind for seeing that. So even if it was done perfectly, it would still, I think, look weird. Cool. Anything else we need to talk about before we jump into the storm?
Or most 2004 thing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, geez. What's the most 2004 thing?
Well, first of all, I want to read off what appears to be... Yes. In Claire's diary, this is not the most 2004 thing, but in Claire's diary, we get her packing list, which I just thought people might want to know about. Makeup, bathroom stuff. I always write bathroom stuff. Do you guys do that? I always write bathroom stuff when I'm making a packing list. Makeup, bathroom. I do, literally. Bathroom stuff, brush, water, books, camera. Oh, that's a 2004 thing. Camera. gum, hat, jerky, CDs and player, and candy.
Oh, CDs and player.
Yeah, CDs and player is on there. But that's I've decided to only pull one thing from Claire's diary for my most 2004 thing that is not her packing list. Is that elsewhere in her diary we see that she needs to there is a DVD that she needs to return to Blockbuster. So is it so is it Claire's errand that she needs to return a DVD? Well, no, sidebar real quick. What DVD do you think Claire rented that she needs to return to Blockbuster in 2004?
Ooh. A Sandra Bullock movie.
Mm.
The Net.
Mm. No. Like a what's the one where she's asleep?
While you were sleeping?
Yeah.
Oh, like a pleasant Sandra Bullock movie.
I mean, if that's pleasant.
What's the one where she's asleep? She's actually not asleep. A point of order. She's not the one sleeping in While You Were Sleeping.
Oh, he's the one sleeping.
Yeah, it's Peter Gallagher sleeping in While You're Sleeping. And Peter Gallagher isn't even the guy. Bill Pullman's the guy. It's a whole bait and switch. Anyway, this has been While You're Sleeping cast. Okay, so is it Claire's errand that she needs to return her copy of While You Were Sleeping to Blockbuster, to the Australian Blockbuster? Is it that Locke and Michael essentially do a ropes course? Is it that there is a cab in Michael's flashback, or is it that there's a payphone in Michael's flashback? So what is the most 2000, even though those flashbacks take place earlier than 2004, but what is the most 2004 thing? Is it ropes course, Blockbuster, cab, or payphone? Dave?
It's real close to the Blockbuster, but I'm going to say payphone.
Payphone. Neil?
I'm going to say payphone as well, specifically because in 2004, it would have been right in the middle of the heyday of, like, The Wire being on. So the fact that there were payphones in The Wire is a very 2004 thing as well. Okay. So, like, it was like, oh, man, I just watched The Wire, and there are payphones in that, too.
To be clear, he used that payphone in 1996, according to the timeline. So, but yeah.
I'm just saying, payphones and TV were a big thing back then.
Sure.
That's how long ago payphones were a thing. They were so long ago that they were TV 15 years ago.
Anything pre-smartphone, I think, is in the payphone still exists time period. Because it's not that cell phone technology wasn't around, but I don't remember payphones getting, like, yanked out until, like, the 07, 08.
Right. Like, iPhone was like 2007.
Yeah, yeah. Or at least maybe that's just when I noticed it. Who knows? Anyway, that's why we both vote payphone, Joanne.
Okay, payphone it is. And I just want to really quickly, before we hop into the storm, talk about, like, the way in which this episode, you already mentioned this, Neil, in terms of, like, the show went out of its way to make us think one thing about Michael, as did about, as it maybe is doing about Jin. And then we get, like, this information about Michael in this episode, including, like, he's not only, like, a nice guy who really wanted to keep his son, but, like, he goes out of the way to, like, protect Susan and her choices. He protects Michael from knowing that Brian is a piece of shit. And then he steals Brian's dog, which is, like, the coolest thing that's ever happened. So, fuck you, Brian. Vincent's living his best life on the island.
Yeah, the takeaway that we should have from the flashbacks this week is not really anything about Michael. It's that Brian sucks.
Brian Porter sucks. And one last thing. If I were Emily DeRaven, I would not be thrilled by the fact that my character showed up in response to a dog whistle. So there you go.
I mean, right. Coincidence, right? Or
it's a coincidence.
Yeah,
I just think
it's a coincidence. But, in an episode that we're supposed to believe Walt maybe manifested a polar bear, maybe not the most.
What if John Locke manifested Claire? What?
Oh. All right, Joanna, who are we talking to this week before we get in the storm?
Guys, it's Matt Patches. Dave and I will be having a little chat with friend of the pod, Matt Patches, host of Fighting the War Room. What's his title at Polygon, Dave?
I think he's the entertainment editor
and a new dad. So
there we go.
Newish dad. Here to talk about dad stuff.
Well,
we are thrilled, beyond thrilled, to be joined on this podcast by senior editor of all things entertainment at Polygon. It's Matt Patches. Hello, Matt Patches.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. And we also have another voice on this section that people are unused to hearing, someone they might have heard of. It's Dave Gonzalez. Hello, Dave.
Oh, hey. How's it going?
Way to steal my spotlight, Dave. Oh. You get every episode of the Lost podcast.
I thought I'd help share the load with Joanna here to talk about Special, because, I mean, let's start off here. You're a father. And I don't want to overly dox your child this podcast.
Yeah, I don't want to dox your child at all on this podcast.
Right, so
they'll even have doxable information as far here, as oh,
well, we does, there was a while before we used. Okay, so we know we are going to gender as a her. There's a while before we were allowed to use her name freely on our other podcast. So are we allowed to name her just a her?
I don't really use her name on our other podcast, which is called Fighting in the War Room.
But. Yeah, no, that's why I wanted to set those things. You have a daughter. She is how old?
She's 1.5 years old. We can definitely say that.
Let's call her.
We'll call
Walt.
Her Eve. We'll call her.
I wanted to call her Walt, but okay. Let's call her E.
E. Which is good because that's, also like a screaming, hissing sound. So I'm sure she could say her own pseudonym at this point.
That's right.
So you're a new father. And that's a perspective that we were missing on this episode of Special. And Special is really all about that.
I was about to say, it's not a very lore filled episode. So I don't know. It doesn't even
have like. Polar bears and like
that's true. There is a polar bear.
Birds flying into windows. Weird shit happens in this episode.
There's the Shinnen, of course.
Yes,
but, but in the grand scheme of Lost, I mean, wait—is this the spoiler section? Have you already done that? Where are we?
You can be spoiler free for right now, and if you want to talk spoilers later, we can.
Well, I don't think that this episode, in the grand scheme of things, moves the needle.
Does it move the needle in terms of like introducing the possibility of Shinnen, as you said, a Simpsons reference to The Shining, like as a possible element? Like whatever it is that Walt does or doesn't do in this episode is something we haven't seen a character do.
True. In true Lost fashion, it's just ripping cans of worms open and dumping them all over the screen, and Damon Lindelof and Carl DeGruz will figure out if they can connect all the dots by the end. And it's just cool, right? Yeah, it's pure Lostian mystery combined with like the real human drama. Later in this episode, we get to see Walt's stepfather just freak out because his stepson can kill birds with his brain. And that is too weird to be a parent. And that guy has major parenting problems already. His stepson did not need to possess the Shinnen in order to freak him out and want to punt him to his old dad. That's something maybe we'll get into, but like, that's what I love about Lost, right? He doesn't need to have superpowers to freak adults out and to be really difficult to connect with on the island, but that's an added bonus.
Do you think we see enough of young Walt in this episode to know whether or not he was like difficult on his parents?
I think we do. And I'm glad that you have me on this episode because I've in the last year and a half of becoming a parent, been spending a lot of time reading and listening to people talk about being parents. And I have pretty serious feelings about how Walt is being parented in this episode and whether he is difficult or not. Your question is kind of the wrong one to ask. Is Walt a difficult child? I don't know if there's a real I don't think that the child could be difficult. It's about how you parent that child. All children are difficult.
Okay, so of our three parents that we have for Walt in this episode, which one is the best one, do you think? Because they all have failings either thrust upon them or they manifest failings just by being people.
You're saying Susan, Brian, and Michael.
Correct.
Yeah.
Brian is the stepfather.
Yeah, Brian's like a one we do.
I would say that there are four parents.
And Locke?
Okay.
Episode.
Locke?
No, not Locke. Oh. No.
The
not
island?
That Locke. The island is a character all along.
The nanny?
No, I would say that Michael off the island and on the island is kind of like two versions. He's not the same person. No one is. That's the beauty of the island. And it's forcing him into a new position. I mean, he hasn't seen Walt in 8 years by the time that they get on the island. He's not his dad. Truly, in by like parenting standards, he's not his father. He's the person in charge of him. He's his guardian for now. But as far as parenting goes, this is brand new. This is not the guy who was a great dad playing on the floor and being like a stay at home dad when Walt was two. Totally different and really not comparable. And this whole episode is about Michael figuring out what it means to be a dad and what parenting really means, which is not talking to your kid like your kid is an adult, talking to your kid like he's a kid, and listening to your kid. And parenting is not, you know, there's a kind of a throwaway line that would strike any parent in this episode, which is like, you're going to have to learn your please and thank yous. And, or I think the line is please and thank you. You got to work on that. And it's a complicated request. So when it's coming out of Michael's mouth early on in the episode, it means that Walt needs to grow up and needs to get his act together and needs to start acting like an adult because they're on the island, and he needs to respect his dad, and he has to like unpack all this baggage that Michael is putting on him as a parent. What Michael's right about is that kids do need to learn their please and thank yous, and the part of parenting is reprimanding through repetition, or just like shaping a kid from the very beginning and living the life that you want to instill upon them. If Michael says please and thank you, then Walt will be a please and thank you kid. But Michael's big problem in this episode and in life when he and his son reunite after 8 years is that he thinks parenting is like telling a kid what to do and then expecting results. And that's not what parenting is. Parenting is about introducing ideas and hoping they stick, and then listening to your kid and responding to how they behave. And Walt is fucked up. I mean, Walt has gone through so much before getting to the island. The least being his psychic abilities that he has not reckoned with whatsoever until he gets to the island. I mean, his mom dies in this kind of tragic way. We don't even know. I don't think. Do we know what she died of?
Blood disease.
That classic blood disease of having too much blood. She exploded. It was gross. So his mom tragically dies. His stepfather is an a-hole. Mm-hmm. Who rushes to Michael to be like, I can't deal with this kid. I don't even want to be a father. I just wanted to be with his mother. And it's like,
hot mom.
We can
really
unpack
this
that
part
too.
Yeah.
That's like, if you listen to a lot of people talk about parenting, you hear that a lot. You hear people who are like, or you especially hear moms talk about their husbands who, hey, like my husband didn't, you know, he's never wanted to become a parent, or he doesn't know how to parent. How do I help him? It's like, that's such a fucking rude man in that person, in that woman's life. Like people who are reluctant parents, you know, you got into this. You can't be in a relationship with someone and not be the parent of their child in some capacity. There's a way to navigate that.
Yeah, I gotta say with Brian, like, if you take the long lens of this, like, his long game was, like, convincing Susan to, like, take a job abroad and, like, move around with him and then, like, be with him, but he has no interest in her child. Like, Brian, I mean,
Susan, and this has been going for 8 years?
Yeah,
like, he's like, the reason she moved to Amsterdam, right?
Yep. Brian sucks. I have a question for you. In terms of like withholding information, we've got two parents withholding information from their child. Susan withholds from Walt that Michael has been trying to like keep in contact and write to him this whole time. And Michael withholds from Walt the truth about Brian and is like sort of defensive of Susan as well, like sort of for Walt's benefit. Like, what do you think of these two lies that are told to this child?
The thing about parenting is no one knows what to do. You can read everything. You can listen to everyone talk. But like, there's no one who knows how to parent. And all you can do is think about the kid and what your actions do to your kid. And what's so befuddling, I don't think, you know, it's a tough episode. Do you think that this episode wants us to be sympathetic with Susan or sympathetic with Michael? Like, Susan Michael. Seems like a bad mom, right?
I don't think she's a bad mom. I think she genuinely is doing what she thinks is best. I think she thinks she can provide a better life for Walt.
And she does have a job.
And I imagine that she thinks... Like, I don't think she's a malicious person, and I don't think she dislikes Michael. And so I think she, for some reason, she thinks withholding the letters from Walt will be better for Walt in the long run. I think that's what she believes.
But Michael's not a bad guy.
No, she's wrong, but that's what she thinks, you know?
We don't see what happens in between her being like, he wants to adopt Walt, and then later her death after like 8 years pass. But I would assume that you know, the Michael letter writing thing and then her withholding it sort of reads as like she told him to like go away, because there's been lots of parenting situations where, you know, the kid gets adopted, but then the bio parents have like a certain agreement to that is like part of that adoption. Like if it's adoptions while the bio parent is still alive, don't necessarily always result in a clean break. So it seems like she was like, it seemed for Walt, it's better not only that she have he have an adopted father, but he not be confused, but I'll let you write to him. And he was just oblivious to the fact that Walt was never getting the letters.
Yeah. She's just really jeopardizing Walt's entire existence. Like, obviously the drama here is being condensed for network television. But I find, you know, when I watched this episode in 2004 or whatever, I did not connect to Michael at all. Right. I gotta be quite honest. And like, he was always the character I didn't care for. And I probably thought this episode was pretty boring because, again, as we said at the top, like, not a lot happens. And yeah, we get to learn that Michael is a Jedi who can wield the Force. I'm gonna switch my connections
Walt
here.
Walt can do that. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sorry, Walt. Yeah. Walt can do that. Yeah. And that, like, that's great. But like, me in 2004, I'll be really frank, like, Michael being one of the only black people on the island, I did not overthink that or, like, really dwell on that fact. So Michael was always disconnected there. And then his character arc, at least in this first season, I mean, throughout the whole show, like, him and Walt, parent-son, like, that did not resonate with me in college. Nothing about Michael really made sense other than that he was flipping out, at which he does in the island sequences here. Like, he's just so he's a parent. And in 2004, when I was like going from high school to college, all I want to do is get away from my parents. Why would I want to watch Michael or give a damn about Michael? And now it's so tragic because he loves Walt so much, and we don't get to see why, and maybe we do later episodes. I don't really recall. I gotta be honest. Like, why Michael and Susan ultimately break up. I mean, we get hints of it here. Like, they're having trouble at home. She does have this other job, and it will eventually be her opportunity to kind of fall in love with this guy who's whisking her away. Who knows if that's really how it started when she took the Amsterdam job, but their relationship was in a rocky place. And instead of figuring out how to co-parent, I mean, Michael loves Walt so much. He seems to be a stay-at-home dad. So why would you take this kid completely away from him? And why would you not have a conversation about why, like, your actions are going to impact Walt? No one is thinking about Walt in any of this until they get to the island, including Michael. And that's the hardest part too, that he is frantic and that he's sending letters, but he's not really, I mean, he's being prevented from seeing Walt.
I don't know if that's true, because, like, I guess I would say when Susan argues with Michael and her argument is like, what's best for Walt? I mean, like, her argument is ultimately like, who do you think the courts are going to side with? But like, she's also like, what's best for Walt. And I think there's part of Michael that's like, who doesn't believe that he's worthwhile because, you know, he is out of work and he was an artist, but his art didn't go anywhere. So he's an out of work construction worker. So his relationship with his, son's mother fell apart. And so he's got low self-esteem. And so when she's like, no one needs you as a dad, I'll take care of the son, he's like, yeah, in a way, he's like, yeah, you're right. You know, like, I think he thinks.
But he's wrong.
He's wrong. Like, but like,
I mean, this is, and that's what's tragic about that Susan underestimates the value of a stay at home parent, right? That like the work, the job that Michael has taken on in their family, he's given his entire life now because his art hasn't worked out. This is his job. And this is the deep connection that he's made to Walt, his son, to think that she would throw out a line like, hey, the courts would side with me anyway. He might as well come with me. I mean, are you saying that you think, yeah, it does make sense that Susan would take Walt away?
No. I'm just saying, like, I think that, you know, she is slightly, as a lawyer, slightly playing on Michael's right. own like low self-esteem here, being like, right. come on, bud, you know you're not good enough for our son, sort of thing. Ugh, you know, something that I want to ask you, and this is exactly why I wanted to have you on, is this idea, well, for a million reasons, you're just a pleasure to talk to,
but I'm also like, the I sang the theme song to Lost, if you recall. Eventually I should come on your show.
No, you said from the start, like, have me on. But I was thinking, I was so interested to hear you reflect on 2004 Patches and his concept of Michael versus 2019 Patches and his concept of Michael.
Yeah.
And so thank you for doing that. Another thing that I've been thinking about, we talk a lot about J.J. Abrams' influence on Lost. We talk even more so about Damon Lindelof, who is like always been fascinated with like daddy issues, and that is, you know, permeated throughout. But Carlton Cuse has a son, Nick Cuse, who's currently working on the Watchmen series with Damon Lindelof, who, like, Carlton Cuse, when he, you know, eventual co-showrunner of Lost, when he was working on this show, he was a father. Like, Damon Lindelof wasn't a father yet, I don't think. No, his son is 13, so yeah.
J.J. Abrams was a father.
So it's this idea of like, yeah, Damon's daddy issues, I think, like, overshadow all else in Lost, but this is like a son issue. You know what I mean? Like, whatever the other side of a daddy issue is like a parenting issue. Like, how do you parent a child?
Right.
How do you do this sort of thing? You know?
Yeah. You know what? I never thought of Michael and Walt as a kind of complement to Jack and his dad. I've never really watched Lost in that way. And I don't think the show really puts them in parallel enough to ever think about them in contrast in that way. I mean, there are a lot of parents and kids on the show. There will be a baby born eventually. There are a lot of those types of relationships, but this is the most of the like adult characters that we should see ourselves in parenting a sentient child who is on the cusp of like becoming grown up. And I mean, that's what his powers really represent. That's why they never have to explain Walt's Jedi mind tricks. It's really just the Lostian way of saying, about to be an adult, so let me throw a knife at a tree, which is the most useless skill. Why is Locke teaching Walt
to throw a knife at a tree? That was going to be my parenting question. Do you let your child learn how to throw a knife at a tree?
I mean, you do let your child learn the like metaphorical parallels to throwing a knife at a tree, but you don't. What? Like, that does not.
Well, it's
you're
like,
not going to kill a boar by throwing a knife at it.
Better question. Then let me reframe it. You said that the best you could do to raise a child is just like talk to it, be honest, not gendering, not specifically trying to dehumanize a child. Talk to them. There we go. You know, hear things. Wouldn't that be easier on an island setting? Whereas here, I guess Michael's also thinking that Walt isn't going to have a good future on the island. But in terms of day-to-day parenting, Walt seems super controllable on the island. Or he's like, you throw him back into LAX and he has his like 8-day...
He's not controllable. That's the problem. He's slipping more away with Locke and Michael, because he hasn't been around for 8 years, is not just a parent. He's a protector, and he feels, you know, like every single move is going to influence and change this kid. This is a traumatic. He's been through several traumatic events now. He's over parenting. He's helicopter parenting, right? Like, he is afraid of all these other people on the island. He says it in the episode that they're like forming a home. And I think that scares him because he wants to get back to the status quo. He wants to have the home that he always envisioned that we get to see a flashback of, like a beautiful apartment and a great crib and a little kid and a wife. And that this island is the antithesis of that. And dealing with anything but the leveled out, imagined plan that you have for your family is the hardest thing that I think parents go through. There's always going to be a curveball, and for some people it's divorce, it's for some situations that like Michael and Susan wind up in, where they have to figure out how to co-parent and that one parent refuses, and everything is complete chaos. And that's not what anyone dreams of when they have a kid, which is just a tumultuous experience from the very beginning. Like, even in the 2 years that Michael got with Walt, that probably sucked. And the fact that when Susan is walking out and saying, I'm going to take Walt with me, like, you have to, no one who doesn't have a kid can imagine how much shit a parent has just gone through in the first 2 years of a kid's life. And then to feel like someone's going to walk out on you and take that kid, like, it's actually devastating. And it's really low key in this episode, but it's something I would never have felt or thought about in 2004, obviously. And then seeing him on the island, like, snapping at Locke. I mean, I always thought Michael was just a crank. I always thought Michael was a guy, like, a one note performance. And I think it's much more complicated now.
That's, I love that. This is like my, I'm so happy that you're having this experience with him. Something that's just occurred to me while you were talking about it, is something that we've explored a lot on the show, is this idea of the blank slate. Like, when you come, tabula rasa, right? Like, you come to the island, you get a chance to have a do-over. And whatever your sins of the past were, you get to be a new person on this island if you so choose. But that is harder for these pairs. There are three pairs, Shannon and Boone, Michael and Walt, and Jin and Sun. And while it's true that, like, Walt doesn't know who Michael is, Michael is held accountable for the fact that he wasn't there, even though it's not his fault that he wasn't there. Like, he wasn't there. So there's something, you know, he can't just, like, you know, shake the Etch-a-Sketch and be someone new because he's got someone else's perception of him that he's carrying onto the island with him. The same, I think, I would argue is a true Shannon and Boone and Sun and Jin, where it's like, you don't have the same opportunity that, like, say, a Kate does to just be like, to try to be like, what outlaw, you know, like, sort of thing,
right?
When you get to the island, because the baggage that they're carrying comes in the form of, like, another human. So I think that's,
well, the interesting thing about, yeah, obviously there's characters who are trying to wipe the slate clean and be new people in this new community, and they can reinvent themselves. Locke's the same way too, right? And then you have Sun and Jin, who are forced to kind of clean the slate a bit, or they need to adapt, and they are forced to change. And then you have Michael and Walt, and Michael was already about to do that. He doesn't have to go to the island to have to completely reinvent himself for his life, because he's now, again, the father of his own son, who he has not seen in 8 years. So this is a blank slate situation for him. And he comes to the island hoping to reestablish the old version of him and Walt, that he has this dream of when Walt was two, and that's what their relationship should continue to be. And yet he gets, in this episode, stuck in a limbo where he is snapping at his kid to be like a 2-year-old, right? And while still yelling at him and having arguments. And the number one thing you should never do as a parent is engage with your kid like you're having an adult argument. And so he is in a true chaos pattern, because he is dreaming of fathering a 2-year-old when his son is 10. And the most beautiful moment is when it all falls away for a few seconds and they talk about how Michael used to sketch comic books, or like trace comic books. And I really like that moment in this episode, because it's him talking to his son as a kid. Here's what I did when I was younger, and here's something that you're doing, and I can teach you a lesson now because you're young and you're just trying to figure out what this comic book is all about. And yet it is progress too. He's talking to him as a 10-year-old, not a 2-year-old. He's not being the father protector that he dreamed of being 8 years ago. He's actually being a parent of a 10-year-old, and it's a big leap for him. And eventually, I don't know, he saves him from a real polar bear, and it's an action adventure show and everyone hugs. But I think the comic book moment is, like, profound. What's great about Special, the episode that we're talking about, is that it's an actual father-son dynamic. It's not a fake TV precocious child who can talk like an adult and the father will learn from their wisdom that they've somehow gained, right? It's an actual kid. Walt walks alone in the woods and runs away to Locke because his dad is a jerk. in his words. And Michael makes the worst mistake possible as a parent and says, "You want to hate me? Fine. You'll listen to me though." And it's like, that is not how you get a kid back on your side. You don't spar with a kid. And that's why this is not going to be the Christian Jack relationship whittled down to a different age range. It's totally different how a kid's mind works, why he would walk alone in the jungle with his dog. Like, all of this stuff is such kid behavior, and no one else has that dynamic on the island at all, because no one else has to parent on the island. Oh, what a fucking pain in the ass. Yeah, Jack, go have your adventures and go get us water and build a camp. I have a 10-year-old, for Christ's sake. God, he's so annoying, and he has to be played with, and he hates life and he hates me. It is the greatest challenge that anyone on the island has, parenting a kid. Holy crap. And no one, I mean, there's no other character.
Can I ask you a weird pop culture question?
Yes.
When a friend of mine had her babies, she was like, she is still like a huge pop culture aficionado, but it really changed the way that she was able to see things, and like certain things were ruined for her that she loved before. For instance, the original Mad Max film, which, spoiler alert, has like the death of a child in it. She's like, she can't watch Children in Peril or death of children anymore. But she used to love the original Mad Max film, and now she can't watch it. Is there anything that like you feel like you can't watch anymore now that you're a dad?
Nothing that I can't watch, but God, there was something I was like crying at the other day, and I felt so embarrassed because it was like really hackneyed crap. Everything with a kid will make me tear up. I was looking at photos on iPhoto or whatever of my daughter like 2 days ago. That made me cry. Everything makes me cry. So no, I will watch child murder or whatever in movies and shows, but I mean, I'll probably get upset, but I'll still watch it.
I will.
Yeah, he's in for all. He's in for all 2 hours and 45 minutes of it. Chapter two.
Okay. Wow.
No, those kids deserve it.
Dave, is there anything else you want to ask? Patches.
No. Let me just check my notes. Make you weak. All right. And
let me end this podcast. Yeah. With asking you guys a question.
Sure.
You both of you do not have kids. You have interacted with many children in your lifetimes. What about you? I mean, do you feel differently about Michael Walton? You may have talked a little about this, but just from like specifically empathizing with parenting, I think the hardest thing about being a parent, especially for me, I don't have a lot of friends who have kids. The hardest thing about being a parent is how alone you feel when you are a parent without people going through it with you, and being able to empathize. And we were joking about how Michael is the only one who has to parent a damn 10-year-old on the island while everyone else is like foraging for food
picking mangoes and flirting,
inventing himself. Yeah, stooping and such. Right. Very lucky. But Michael is very alone, and that is a feeling that I don't see a lot in movies and TV, and I'm not necessarily saying that the episode special captures that in a meaningful way, but it's something I think about a lot. And I wish that people I knew who didn't have kids could understand the turmoil at times that people with kids go through. Not that like, hey, it was my decision, I had a kid, I'm not looking for that much sympathy, but it's hard to understand what people go through. It's not like having a pet, which some people think that.
Can I get really personal? Is that okay?
This is your podcast. You can do whatever the hell you want. I'm not your dad.
The affirmation friend who loved Mad Max, that was my best friend in the whole world, Gail. We were really, really close for a really long time. We still are really good friends, but I think this is something that we talked about when she had her kids. It was hard. Like, we love each other, we support each other. It became increasingly hard for us to relate to each other. And like, it's something we were very honest about. Like, the fact that she needed to have other mom friends or other parent friends, like, is very understandable. My sister, who has, you know, two sons, my nephews, like, she has a huge circle of parent friends, but like, my friend Gail, like, none of us in like her larger, hardly any of us in her larger circle of friends have kids. And she was like the only one, and she made some like friends where she lived, but not much. And so she was sort of isolated in that way. And then she, year and a half ago, 2 years ago, moved to like Kansas City, Missouri with a couple of our other friends who have kids who lived elsewhere. They all kind of like moved to Kansas City, Missouri. Yeah. And so there's like a couple young moms out there now, like people we knew in LA. For one problem is that it's impossible to live in California with the real estate. And another is like, they just sort of wanted, I think partially, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I think partially like she wanted to be around like other like-minded moms, and like,
yeah,
you can't really begrudge like that hurts me, and I think it hurt her also, but I can't begrudge her wanting that, and I think she can't begrudge me trying my best but not being able to fully understand what she's going through, you know. And we were talking about, there is a scene in this episode that I think is really telling. And it's, with Jack and Hurley, when Hurley is like, looking at Michael, and he's like, ugh, he really hates being a dad. Jack's like, no, it's just hard. And something that I mentioned, Patches, was that like before I had nephews or like my goddaughter, my godchildren or whatever, like I would go on a plane and kids would be misbehaving and I would be so annoyed. Mm-hmm. And now I go on a plane and I just like imagine my sister or my best friend like, yep, in that role. And I'm just sort of like, oh, they're doing their best. Okay. You know, and I don't get annoyed. And so it's just sort of like, that is a change in me. It's not able to fully understand what it's like to be a parent, but I feel the same about watching Michael and Walt. It's like, I'm imagining my sister, with a 10-year-old, like with my even my oldest nephew, who's like the sweetest kid on an island. No, thank you. And I think that does give me more empathy for the Michael character, which I did find the Michael character very annoying when I originally watched the series.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's the closest I can get to like really sort of feeling for it. Dave, you've got friends with kids though, like not just
Patches,
but local.
But
friends.
I mean, I also am in that group where what I've learned being kid adjacent is that I both envy and will never understand the ability for your life to have a very definitive purpose and for that to be so enriching to your existing emotions. I could do a lot of things as a childless person and even a person with a partner that will, you know, deepen the human experience or whatnot. But I don't think there's a substitute. There's like that South Park episode about racism where the answer is finally for Stan to tell Token, the black child, that he just doesn't get it and he never will. And that's the answer. And that's my answer with parenting. Even as somebody whose like other job involves them knowing a lot of like facts about parenting and parenting law and watching a whole bunch of examples of good and bad parenting, it's just, I don't know it. And I envy the ability to have it, just not to the point where I'm going to do it myself yet.
Well, I don't think anyone knows what they're doing, as I said. So we're on the same page.
But I do like there. Hearing about it, like hearing from you and hearing from Katie Rich, another friend of the pod, and stuff like that. I want to better understand. And so
I think the more
I hear, the closer I get to understanding. But yeah, as Dave said, there is no way to actually understand, and to try to judge someone for the way that they parent if you've never parented actually yourself is ridiculous.
But also the reverse is true. Like, you know, parents can get very judgy about people who don't, and like, you know, it has to go both ways. And there's, if people don't want to have kids, people don't have kids. If people want kids, people can have kids. I think I would implore anyone who doesn't have kids, who have friends that have kids, to like read a little about what raising a kid is all about. There isn't a lot of media out there,
I think, you know, the only
pop culture to show you what that's like. And even this conversation, I hope, is enlightening to people who would not have kids, to just understand like it's so exhausting.
maybe this is a silly comparison, but the media that like first helped me understand this was actually an episode of Sex and the City. I don't know if you guys remember, but like, like Miranda has her kids and then she feels like isolated from her other three friends who don't. And she like, you know, talks about like how hard it is for her, you know, to like be the only one. And yeah, absolutely. Of course, that's very isolating. So poor Michael, the only one.
To bring it back to Lost, now that I've learned that, you know, having a child makes me like Michael more, should I sleep with my stepsister and I'll like Shannon more?
That's going to be a big choice.
What a weird thing for you to say.
Oh boy, oh boy.
I think that's it, right?
Yep.
Patches,
that was it.
Patches, if people want more of your thoughts on anything at all, where can they find you?
Where can they find me? I'm available on Twitter at Mr. Patches, and I am pulling all the strings at polygon.com, and yeah, we're writing all sorts of things there. I haven't written about Lost yet. Maybe we should. And clearly I need to start my parenting podcast soon. One day.
I would listen.
No, first I'm going to, you know, get trapped on an island and then broadcast it from there as me and my child try to coexist. That's a good premise. Yeah, that's my life.
Now is the time of the podcast where we love to thank our Small Council Patreon subscribers. They are subscribing at the $10 level or above. They get a whole bunch of perks they pay for, including us reading out their names. So we want to thank a newcomer, Dahlia Marin. And also Michael Mora, Lewis Walker, Adam Barnum, Sean Patrick Marks, Claudia Davis, Chip Mims, Annette Moneri, Anne Heisick. I took a stab at that, Anne. Let me know if that was really wrong. Julia Mahoney, Jonathan King, Brian Ohm, Martha Petroszewski, Will Wallace, Seth Harper, Vic, Kenny Malone, Cecilia Nielsen, and A. Will. Thank you guys so much.
Hey, look at this. I also have a list of some people that we would like to thank, including Hannah. We also have Will Neville, Justin Peterson, Tone Kristen Langone. All right. I threw a little on it. Jess Kearson, Skip Bujanig. Oh, no. That went poorly. Probably. Michael Caswell, James Barta, Austin Abessinio, Kathy Jones, Norman Thompson, Zim.
Hey, chill out.
Amin, Kat Stromberger Perez, Tatiana V, Lori Carmichael Howell, David McGillivray. All right.
Nailed it.
Inigo Soriano, Caroline of the North, and Kristen with a Y.
And I'd like to thank Mark Harper, Priscilla Walton, Jenna Paul, Amy, Jackie Pawlowski, David Matheson, Andrew, Stephanie Jenner, Claire Smith, Kaylee Hicks, Shane Yap, David Adams, David Moran, AJ Cabbage. I'm going to say Cabbage.
It's Cabbage.
Cabbage, nice. AJ Cabbage. Yeah, that's good. AJ Cabbage, Del Martinez, Steph Deal, Liz Beisline, Josh Brown, Rochelle Rawlings, and Jeff Ruberg. Thank you guys so much. And we're back, and it's time to talk the story.
Walt!
Oh! I was not ready for the Walt screaming.
This episode is just him saying Walt.
It starts with him going, Walt, have you seen my boy? Sorry.
It's a little on the nose.
I've been dying to say that since. I mean, they don't know that that's what is going to be his catchphrase on this series yet, but they took my boy.
This is where they figured it out.
What? Anyway,
this
sorry.
I was really bursted,
fairly bursted to say that in the calm. So here we go.
So we'll start where we always start, which is antagonist check-in with Dave and John Locke. This week, John starts building the anti-raft team. By putting just enough of his foot in the door, to be able to cover for Walt, later on, when Walt burns down the raft. Not that he has any way of knowing this, but I do believe and John's interest in Walt goes a little bit beyond a creepy guy who shows no interest in children otherwise in his life, and might be somewhat island influenced, because we know the island's influenced in Walt, or interested in Walt.
Okay, no. You're full of stuff and nonsense this week, because listen, Locke is not as calculating. You're attributing calculation to him when I don't think he's that calculating. Secondly, he does express interest in children. He is totally all up in Claire's baby's business, once the baby's born, once Aaron's born. So like, I think Locke has like a little thing for kids. That all of that sounded wrong, but like, I think he has tender fatherly feelings. He thinks like, what if I could have been a dad? Like, my dad sucked. I have a really bad relationship with my dad. Like, these are things he's thinking of, not like, how can I later be influential enough to sway Walt to my nefarious schemes or something like that. And like, yeah, he's interesting. I think Locke's main motivation at this point is something miraculous has happened to his body. Doesn't understand it. He is so fascinated. He's like, this is it. This is what I was born. I'm here to figure out my purpose. Something amazing is happening. This island is magical. I know it is. Walt is part of that magic. So that interests me, but not in a like, he's not going to like zombify him like he did Boone. Like, he's not going to smear ayahuasca on this poor kid. So like, you know, I don't like your reading of Locke in this episode is my point.
We don't know that he wasn't going to head goop Walt.
I absolutely don't. I think Locke would not head goop.
I also disagree, Dave.
For all we know, Locke's plan was just slowly head goop everybody and the island's like, actually, I could do this without the goop, so you don't need to worry about it so much.
I never read Locke as knowing what Walt does with the raft until like right as it happens. Like I never thought that Locke was like part of any of that. Or no, that he knew or suspected or, you know, like the Walt burning down the raft thing is like straight out of left field. You know, at the time.
Sure. I don't think that he influenced Walt to do it, but I do think his team is anti-raft, and the second he figures out about a raft will be anti-raft.
I mean, no, it could be even simpler that like Walt is one of the only people who shows interest in doing things that involve being on the island. Like Walt sort of seems like he could be part of the gang, at one point, you know, like the we want to stay on the island gang. But that's a fairly innocent read for John to have.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't think
Walt's interest in knives.
I don't think it's fair to say that Locke is anti-raft, because he doesn't like, he doesn't burn the raft like Walt does, and he doesn't like try to poison like Sun and Kate do.
He's
not
just
like
pro-island.
Yeah, he's like, I just want to stay here, so that's how I feel about it. You like, them leaving is not, well, them leaving maybe would result in other people finding the island.
Well, but he hit Saeed over the head with a fucking piece of wood, and then sent him to go stab Sawyer.
I think Locke gains confidence in like his belief that the island is special and has drawn him and maybe these other people there. He gets less weird about it. Like, I feel like that happened early enough to where it was like, he was sort of panicking. He's like, I don't want to be found just yet. I don't know anything about this island. But now that he realizes that like some people might actually want to stay, then he's like, oh, well, it's fine now.
If he was so vehemently anti-raft, he would have done something active to sabotage the raft. Like, I think he's okay with Michael wanting to take his son off the island. He's not like, no, you can't go. There are other times when he's like, we're supposed to be here, more specifically aimed at Jack, right? But like, he's not getting in the way of Michael doing what he thinks is right for Walt.
I also think that the timing of when they find the hatch matters in this as well, because now Locke puts a lot of invested time, emotional energy into the hatch as like this problem he has to solve, this thing, this question he needs to answer for the rest of the season. And if Michael had started building the raft before that, maybe Locke's a little more paranoid. But now that he's got the hatch, he's like, well, let them do whatever they want. I now have this question that I need to answer that's deep into the jungle.
He's got his project. I've got my project.
Yeah, I'm fine. You're fine. We're just going to work on our stuff separate.
I'm okay. You're okay.
Whereas what Saeed was doing was early enough to where if he would have flagged down a ship and they would have all gotten rescued, John never would have gotten it. You know, he potentially would have been dragged off the island.
Right.
I think that, I do think that the creepiest thing, like, Locke adjacent in this episode is, like the way in which Boone is just sort of like has come to heel, like so completely.
Boone attacking Michael like a little dog.
Yeah, like a little dog, but that's on Boone. Like, you know, that's on Boone needing to have a purpose.
It's kind of on Locke.
No, it's on Locke for gooping him, but like Boone's reaction is like, okay, yes, master, now, basically, you know.
Well, now that I can't depend on Shannon for emotional fulfillment, how about this bald guy?
Will you be my dad? We never get into Boone's dad issues. What's Boone's dad like?
Boone's dad's the one who died, right?
Yeah, rich and dead.
No, I thought that that's Shannon's dad.
That was Shannon's dad. Sorry.
Oh.
We don't know anything about
Boone's dad.
Mr. Martha Stewart. Speaking of dads, I do want...
It was Charles Widmore.
It was.
Seriously?
No. I didn't. It was... Brian Porter is Boone's actual dad. I want to talk about Michael. And this question of, okay, so Michael and Walt, we know the reason why this is the second sort of couple in a row, if you count Shannon Boone as a couple, Michael Walt is a couple, that the show gets rid of fairly quickly. And Shannon and Boone, just because those characters weren't working, I think is why they get rid of those characters pretty quickly. And for Michael and Walt, it's because, the kid was growing too fast for the time that they wanted on the island. And that's stupidly not something they realized when they started this endeavor. And so they have to get rid of Walt. Is there a way in which getting rid of Walt still allows for there to be some story for Michael? Or is there no other way other than Michael's story is linked to Walt, and once Walt becomes a problem for the show, then Michael becomes a problem for the show? Because a quick follow-up, I will say, like, when they mentioned this episode, like, we're naming Walt after your father, Walter, it's like, I would have liked to have known about Michael's childhood. I would have liked to have known about his father, Walter. Like, we get a lot of his mom in later seasons, right? Or some of his mom in later seasons. But, like, I would like to know about her, too. I would like to know about all this stuff, the deeper flashback opportunities that are there for Michael, independent of his time as a dad. Like, is the show lacking
an artist?
Is the show lacking in
Michael's artist flashback?
Yeah, is the show lacking in imagination? That it doesn't give us that.
Okay, so no, because Lost ends up being a certain type of show that I think could pull some like crazy sci-fi bullshit, a la Dawn in Buffy. And we would have just accepted it at some point. But I think when it starts and when it establishes Michael as the crux of his character is Walt, no matter what happens to Walt, you're going to feel like an asshole. Or you're going to have a hard time rehabbing the Michael character into another compelling A-line that's more compelling than his forgotten child. You know,
I think it's the difference between like that and like Charlie losing Claire. Was like they didn't know each other until after the crash, where it's like, you know, Charlie eventually you could rehabilitate into a different kind of character or have him have like other stories. But like, I don't know if you could do that with Michael.
Well, also, it felt weird just with Charlie, just for these few episodes, that he wasn't always with Claire. Could you imagine like Michael being like, actually, I care about drawing again?
Fair.
Let me get to those drainage plans again now that my son's gone.
Follow-up question. If Harold Perrineau had been, like, game for this, would it have been fun for... I guess they just needed Walt off the island. I was thinking of, like, Michael in the Cindy role. You know, Cindy the flight attendant who, like, just, like, gets fully assimilated into the others.
Mm-hmm.
Would it have been kind of fun for, like, you know... The others convince Michael that Walt is special and that they should have a hand in, like, raising him. And he's like, okay, we live with you now. You know right. what I mean? Like, and so like whenever we see the others, it's just like Michael's just there. His hair gets longer and longer. He starts to wear weird rags. I don't know. I'm just like, I think it sucks that what happened to Harold Perrineau is like the only, you know, other than Rose, the only like black character on the show. And, when Harold Perrineau got written off, he was very pissed, and sort of made it racial. And I, you know, I don't think it was like intentionally racial. I just think it's interesting, like a show that is trying so hard to give us so many different kinds of characters and so many different perspectives had so much trouble with this character. And part of it is that he's.
Well, I also think they didn't need to write him off just because Walt was gone because I don't know. I wasn't in the writer's room, but it feels like a lot of this island's issue has to do with generations and failed fathers and things, and that could have sustained him, like you said, if he went to live with the others, or if he became, I don't know, even yeah, more if he became of a like dark ghost force. Yeah, yeah.
If like,
but then you're taking one of your only black actors and making them the villain.
The villain, yeah.
Which I guess right. has its own.
I mean,
it's tough because however they intended it, the show by choosing to make these two characters black, it was sort of unfair to Harold because it's unfair to both of them because they sort of wrote themselves into a corner very quickly.
Right. And they have this sort of like phasing in of Mr. Echo. So like Michael isn't the only one, but then that actor didn't want to be on the show anymore. So it's like then Mr. Echo leaves fairly quickly. And so it's just sort of I don't know. And Naomi dies pretty quickly after she gets there. I don't know. It's not great stuff, is what I will say. And Harold Perrineau is like,
so Lost sort of Game of Thrones is it a little bit,
just a little bit, but, and I don't think like intentionally or maliciously, but like these things are often not done intentionally or maliciously. They're done like somewhat carelessly, but, this idea of like flipping the notion of a black father who's abandoned his child on its head a little bit, but then, and Perrineau's argument when Michael dies is he was like, okay, now Walt is just another like fatherless young black boy, and that's something we've seen too much of on television, and I don't like it, you know. And so like
which is true, yeah. He ends up in like a mental institution until Hurley comes to get him after the series.
Yeah, so you know, it's a complicated.
So this is one of the most 2004 things.
I mean, it's just fascinating to see these like these characters that wind up being somewhat failures. I think of Michael as a bit of a failure of a character because like he starts interesting. He's got this like whatever with Sun, and you know, something's happening, and he's very useful. Like he's one of the guys who can actually like build and do stuff on the island. He can like do that sort of stuff, and then he just gets like devolves in season two into someone screaming about his son, and then is just like essentially gone from there with a few exceptions. And so like when you think of Boone and Shannon and Michael and Walt as like failure, like things that they tried and failed at, then it's an interesting thought experiment to be like, okay, how could they have done it better or differently, you know? So
right,
I guess the answer is not cast a kid ? I don't know.
I guess. Well, I think we're going to return to that and talking a little bit more about what Walt's powers are when we get to Man of Science, Man of Faith, and Wet Walt, because that I think is a
please can we not call him
yeah
yet?
Yeah
nope nope alliteration's worth
I'm
it
with, I'm with Neil, you're outvoted.
Older Walt, Aqua, who can manifest Walt. Himself
tall Walt.
Tall Walt.
Tall Walt. Tall Walt. and then also Computer Walt. We'll get to both of those, which I think is a better time to yes. talk about powers rather than manifesting, which...
Wait, Computer Walt might is have not noticed... real.
What?
What?
That's going to be a debate that we're going to have, because that's a question that I have.
Computer Walt is definitely not real. That's really? Definitely like... Mm. I think it's Mikhail being like, Dad, don't you think?
Or Walt's powers are based on electromagnetism,
and when the computer is close enough to the hatch, No.
So
yeah, we're gonna have to come back to this one.
How do birds navigate? They navigate using the electromagnetic centers of the Earth. So if you were to like suddenly crash a bird into the window, you would send out a psychic.
I never knew that
pulse.
People thought Walt was inside the computer. I'm Googling right now, is Walt inside the computer? Literally never occurred to me that someone
You thought it was the others messing with him?
I thought it was definitely Mikhail or someone else, but probably Mikhail. Because Mikhail has the other computer, you know, the other computer.
That's true. No, it could be. I'm just saying there's a lot of questions.
Yeah, Walt can do shit with his
Walt's
mind.
Powers are.
That's what I'm saying.
Polar bear, we still don't know about. Anyway, until where are we going next week? And with whom are we going into the past next week, Neil?
So next week is episode 15, Homecoming. It is a Charlie episode. So come prepared for Charlie. To have some feelings as Claire is returning into our lives, and probably remember doing some drugs or something.
Sounds like a Charlie episode. Until we get back on the dragon, Joanna, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on VanityFair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. You can hear me talking about the HBO series Succession on the Still Watching podcast, and friend of the pod, Katie Rich, and I are doing a little bit of a book club over on the Little Gold Men podcast. We are starting with Little Women, but we are reading four great books in August. So check it out. Little Gold Men. Still watching. Other podcasts that do. Also, sorry. I keep forgetting to say this. I'm doing a My So-Called Life podcast. I'm doing a My So-Called Life podcast with friend of the podcast, Kristen Russo, who you heard talking about problematic faves in an earlier episode. And you can support that podcast on BoilerRoomCast.com, where we've got like a bunch of fun, we're doing Kickstarter, basically a bunch of fun rewards, stuff like that. So BoilerRoomCast.com for the My So-Called Life podcast that we're launching at the end of August.
Excellent. And Neil Miller.
Oh, you know, you can get me over at that FilmSchoolRejects.com. Follow me on Twitter at Rejects. Also follow the at One Perfect Shot account. That's fun. And don't forget that you can follow our show at Storm Podcast, where you can vote on the most 2004 thing of this episode after this episode is out.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, and you could find me every week here talking about Lost and telling you to not fall down.